Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Okay, somebody asked me, what is Wendy's Coffee House? Did I say a podcast? Did I say a radio show? No, I said it's wake up and smell the coffee. That's what Wendy's Coffee House means. Wake up and smell the coffee. What we see here is just a tiny, tiny fraction. Our impression of the world is so minuscule. It's really difficult to get a grip on the bigger picture. But in order to function at a healthy level, the goal is to see beyond that tiny, minuscule impression. Expand awareness and take a look at all of the wonder that we are surrounded by every day. From massive, incredible, unexplainable, earth-shattering events on a world scale that may have to do with people changing, growing, causing disruption, or it could be an environmental issue, such as a hurricane, multiple hurricanes, tsunamis, volcanoes, all sorts of upheaval. And just in time for Election Day, an asteroid heading right toward us, according to NASA. Now, this asteroid is supposed to be about the size 6.5 feet and poses no threat to Earth. If it were to enter the atmosphere, it's supposed to be able to disintegrate because it's so small. All right. Asteroid 2018 VP1. Very important. Not VIP, but VP. Anyway, so this is another anomaly that 2020 is throwing at us because the pandemic is a big one. Now, if there weren't enough crises going on everywhere, then there are the personal crises that sometimes take precedence. And a lot of people right now are dealing with going back to school and whether to homeschool, whether to even go into work if you have to pick up some extra whatever you might have left behind at the office, going out and about. Some people don't find that risky at all. And others are a lot more cautious. Wherever you stand on that, there is a whole different element that comes into play when a relative gets sick. My mom recently had Rocky Mountain spotted fever. Now, I've heard about that. I've heard more about Lyme's disease and how that can have very devastating long-term impact when you get that. And the tick-borne illnesses are nothing to take lightly. The one that my mom had was Rocky Mountain spotted fever with the potential to be fatal. Causes some after effects that do go away, but they gradually fade. So it's actually on the scale of having that a little better than Lyme's disease. But it was also extremely scary because within a few days, she went from being highly functional and alert and active to staying in bed and not getting up. And the red flag was when one of her granddaughters, great-granddaughter, saw her on a video chat and her eyes were half open. And she actually had no clue of what her outward appearance looked like. She thought she was just normal, maybe a little tired. But she had no idea that her eyes were only half open. She felt like, and from then on, she was trying to open her eyes more all the way, and they still only opened halfway. Well, that was a sign. And so my husband and I and our two dogs went ASAP. And just, I knew something, this is not normal. And I didn't want to take any chance she wasn't going to wake up after spending a couple of days completely out of it. And then having a disorientation and confusion along with that. So we actually didn't find out that this is what it was. We had tests run, and since it was over the 4th of July holiday, had to wait for that to happen. Probably a good thing we did, because with all the COVID going on, they may have done some more extensive testing trying to rule that out before they were able to rule this in, and this is a little more subtle. So the tests that happened were really important in the order that it happened. And then after that, so another month after, then we find out that there's another issue. It has to do with an illness that is from, you know, contaminated food, water, other things, and that was also in her system. So it was a 1-2 punch. And that particular element, that one can be there for quite some time, usually known to cause ulcers, but it may not be detected. So it can be hidden and causing an ulcer before you actually get it tested or get a test that indicates that that's an issue. And because of these two, a 1-2 punch, it was very severe. And it could have been that that one had been there for quite some time and just hidden until this tick disease kicked it into high gear. So with all that going on, then my dog Gracie is, she's 14 and she's gradually fading. She's always been my barometer of metaphysical paranormal things. And so when we're doing, you know, lockdown, isolation, Gracie is still going out for walks. Gracie's still interactive. Gracie's still engaged. And when we take her to the house, she's part of our reason for getting out and going for a walk and taking grandma to the park. But that was fading day by day. And watching that and knowing that was a challenge. The other thing, too, though, as this is happening, Gracie starts a new routine. And the routine is that I have a mirror as we're doing, and this is in the home space, as we're doing the show from home where I'm doing my job. She comes into the room in the morning and looks at me in the mirror, and I can see her, and it's a game. So I greet her in the mirror, and she looks at me. And the very last couple of days, she went directly to the mirror, not to me. She knows I'm here. It's our game. She, directly to the mirror and looked at me. And I finally connected a dot or two that she was seeing me in two places. And I can see her in two places. She was seeing the me, this physical body me, and my reflection. And we had contact. There's an experience I had when I was meditating that really changed my life and my view of what we are as physical beings. It's relaxed on the bed, laying down, just and focusing on clearing my mind and just becoming a blank slate, getting everything out of the way and calming and quieting. And I have a different sense. All of a sudden, I'm up on the ceiling, below the ceiling, just looking down at the body on the bed. Not only do I see the body on the bed, I see this glowing orange yellow, bright yellow sun type orb, just a, you know, ball of fire right there above my body, about 8 to 10 inches above my solar plexus, my stomach. And I'm wow, because the thing I have in that moment is a realization that I can also see while I am that orb, that floating, glowing vessel. And while I'm above, hovering in a body shape near the ceiling. So I'm in three places, mind, body, spirit, consciousness, with awareness. Each of those aspects is fully a part of me. Not in totality, because that's still separate. I'm the three. That consciousness is that other element that actually also is present without being present. That I am multiple. So with this, Gracie has reminded me that even though she does not have a physical form now, and it's really another hit that when I'm doing this particular show, the vet calls, and as I'm talking about her. So I actually had to stop and start again. But that's the way it works. We are connected in ways we have yet to fathom and integrate. And that's what this is about. Consciousness evolving. I'll come back and talk about more of the paranormal element with animals and pets and communication. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. In that last break, I talked about having the experience, the meditation experience that happened in 1987. And I had a lot of alone time at that point. So it was one of those things where I had time to step back, reassess, reevaluate, and also explore my own identity. And so meditating gave me a way to decompress and to quiet all of that judgmental stuff of, I should be doing this, I didn't do that, what happened, where am I going, all of that. It just gave me time to think nothing and be comfortable. So I do know that sometimes, you know, this meditation thing can be, people have an expectation of, oh, it's going to take several hours, it's going to take months. It can take 5 minutes or 2 minutes. All you do is get into a space, sit quietly, silent. Shutting out the constant drone, the constant drive, the constant drip of I should be, must be, have to, didn't, all of that stuff goes away. It's just like a reset of going back to center where everything is fresh and clean and the slate is completely, totally open. There's a documentary film in the works about one of the fraternity houses at Lawrence, the KU campus. It's the Sigma Nu house. And it's had a lot of history of, the rumors and the gossip about being haunted. And there's a storyline that it's supposed to play out. This is certain elements, these people, these characters are involved, and this is what it's about. So I've been involved in that recently. They did an evaluation of what might be present, what is causing the haunting, and what could they pick up. And I was the psychic, the intuitive, the sensitive, whatever word you want to call it. That's where we get bogged down, is all these darn labels. When somebody told me I was psychic at one point, or called me a psychic, and this is when I wrote the book, Talking to Nightlights, I was so irritated because I thought that it immediately put it in a different category. And at that point, I hadn't considered myself, I didn't fit myself with that label. So, and still, I refer, when I have to label myself, I refer to myself as an intuitive or a channel, because that's what I've also done and learned and focused on doing, and spent significant amount of time getting that one straight. So this part of knowing these things and going into a place to make an assessment is fascinating. It's not something I choose. I just happen to be invited to go along, and I've done a few. But this one, because of all the drama that is there, there are a lot of assumptions and a lot of projections and a lot of storylines that people have attached without knowing anything. And that's what meditation helps you do. You go back to ground zero and say, quiet. The whole goal is to be silent. And the next goal is to hear the silence. Beyond that, you begin to hear other things, whether they have a voice, a sound, a spark, whatever. It's there. But we can't get to that point until we become quiet and listen to the silence. So you can start with 5 hours, 10 hours, 10 days, 20 days. You can start with 2 minutes. And the only thing you have to do is breathe. And in that short amount of time, you've silenced all of the judgment, all of the what if and why and how and why not, all that stuff. It's gone. That thing of becoming quiet and allowing yourself to expand your awareness, to hear these other things that are around us at all times. Gracie helped me do that. Gracie and I had a telepathic connection. I have that with my pets. It isn't always as loud as I would like it to be. And sometimes I'm not paying attention. It takes me a while and I feel like, oh, I should have figured this out before. But that's life. So at one point, Gracie, I had had somebody come into my house, and there were some things in the house, in each of the rooms, that I needed to find, identify, and remove. Gracie took me to each room, and she sat at the door until I removed the particular items. That was our contact. And at that point, I could look at her and say, is everything clear? And she would blink either once for yes or twice for no. And I don't remember what it is now. And I also asked later, telepathically, why was it just that one time that we had that connection? And the answer was, that was the only time my life was threatened. And she was there to intervene. So there's some very, very powerful things that go on that we may or may not connect. Gracie has also been one who was in tune with the spirit element. And if something was here, and Jack is beginning to do that now too. If something was, we've also had a pet, a raccoon who's becoming a pet because he's a frequent visitor, along with the owls and the possum. She would let me know if a space had extra energy. And my mom's house has extra energy. There's a guy who hangs out there. We've had pictures with him on the orb. He's an orb and sometimes makes his presence known. One Thanksgiving, we were giving the blessing and he blinked the lights. And so Gracie was at that time more intimidated going into the house because there was a guest. And so it was an active house. And with that, this time, since Gracie was in the process of getting ready to transition, there was no discomfort and there was no anxiety because she was more or less on the same level. As we talked about in that earlier segment, the mirror, she could see the reflection. The reflection wasn't going to harm her. She could see the presence, just acknowledge that it was there. And I think prior to that, there was a little bit more confusion about what the purpose was, or that the purpose, it was trying to connect to her, and she did not want that. And that's what happens. This happens for people. When we go into spaces that are haunted or have residual energy, we don't always connect those dots because it isn't front and center, first and foremost. We're more likely to worry about whether we're getting the bills paid or whether, you know, if the health is an issue or all of those kinds of corporeal, physical drama involvements that affect whether or not we can earn a living and go about our daily jobs without interruptions we can't explain. How's that? Interference. And that's the problem. Is too often we don't have a solid explanation. And this is how we learn. And the pets are part of that. So as Gracie is transitioning and giving me clues, she's also saying goodbye to the other pets. And I've watched this as well with Chloe, my cat, as they made their goodbyes. And Chloe did the same thing. They each seemed to look directly at each other. And then everybody kind of walks off and goes their separate ways. With this, when Gracie did that, I knew we were looking at about a week or so. And absolutely, she faded. It was very, very quick. And the car rides were difficult toward the last. So she got to go back to the lake and visit a walk that she enjoyed, although she wasn't able to walk more than a few yards. And that was a way of recognizing her life and her time here. And her friends were cats and dogs and turtles and other beings, squirrels, that she could relate to. The most recent encounter I had, I wasn't sure. With my dog, Max, he came back and barked for 2 weeks. There was a bark. I thought Gracie had learned how to bark. But it was Max barking at the door to let her in. Gracie always scratches the door. What happened, though, is I was trying to go to sleep and was just briefly off to sleep, dreaming. And there I was on a bridge. And on this bridge, it's concrete or granite. It's empty. I can't even see the other side. I can't see what's around the bridge. I have that moment where I'm standing on the bridge and getting to walk across. And just, I'm standing on the bridge and I'm beginning to walk across. And then my husband woke me up. So I'm waiting for the rest of the story. How to connect with your pets. Next, Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Now, you are probably already connecting to your pets without even thinking about it. They see images. They read us. We are an open book. All right. The language, unfortunately for us, takes a little while to learn because we're looking for something linear. When I ask the dog, do you want to go out? the dog may not connect to out the way we expect unless there's been a repetitive imprint, result, or outcome. Every single time, concrete, exact same out demonstrated. But it isn't just the word or the language. The dog is also reading my body language as a clue. So my actions are also telegraphing what I am hoping my dog will respond to and pick up on. The imagery is also important, though, because I may have already flashed a picture of the outside, the door opening and the dog going out, and they're reading that. And that imagery is something we don't even think about. Most of the time, we haven't been taught about it. It's just something that happens inadvertently. Once you pick up on how important that is and how easily you can improve your results by flashing a picture of what you want as the outcome, it helps. So if you're trying to teach your pet a new trick, a new behavior, they're going to picture what you are seeing in your mind. We are constantly imagining. We constantly create these images, these dramas, these diagrams in our minds. So other people can read that. When you're talking to somebody who's telepathic or psychic or intuitive, sometimes those images are flashing for other people and basically giving away your storyline, all right? Depending on how loud you are, psychically, metaphysically speaking. It's a projection, a broadcast, an impression, and people pick up on it. So pets are doing the same thing. Animals read us. They read our body language. They read our physical, if we have a different scent about us, if we're healthy, they can tell if we're not feeling well or if a person is sick. My other dog, Max, when somebody didn't feel well, he would go right up to them. He would just be there. He would just be present. And he attached to people who needed a little bit of compassion. I was astounded at his ability to connect and make that contact. So with Gracie, I learned that she would try to give me impressions or images, and she was better getting her point across to my husband. But that's the thing, too, is that it may not be perfect. But once you allow yourself to receive and to not have an expectation of how it's supposed to happen, it will happen differently with each animal. I had a bird that I was dealing with, and the bird, I had this immediate image of the bird biting my finger. And I thought, I had to step back and think, was I projecting that? Because the bird did try to bite my finger and he was looking at my finger. And fortunately, before I got snapped at, I pulled the finger back. But the look in his eyes and the action that he had, yeah, I was going to get bit if I didn't back up. Another time, my cat was laying on my chest and looking at the necklace. And I was looking at him, and I'm seeing the image from him that he's going to bite the necklace. He's just looking very, you know, intently at it, curious, because it sparkled, and he was going to nip at it. And I looked at him at that point, and my automatic thought was, don't. He looked at me, his eyes got big, and I thought, oh my gosh, because it was so clear and so present, we both knew exactly what that message was. And I think for him, it was a surprise that I had connected and intuited and, you know, flashed him that sign of don't without saying a word. So this is the stuff that happens. One time I was working with a person and the dog was there, and I'm hearing the dog say, she sings to me. She sings to me. And so I said, do you make up songs for your dog? And she kind of blushed and put her head down. And then she had this look of, yes. Yes, I make songs. We make up songs, and I put her name in it, and I sing her little songs. I mean, she was a little embarrassed at first to admit that this is something that she did. But then there was a joy of knowing that somebody else got it and that the dog was telling on her. And pets do have the ability to tell on you. So that's also part of it. But it isn't about judgment. It's more about disclosing the connection and why they may be present in your life. So if you're wanting to connect with pets, the first thing that is easy to do is to focus on imagery and pictures and be aware of the pictures that you are transmitting. this is a way of, let me giving you an example of how it might work. And this is a story I got years ago when I was in radio, and one of the general managers I worked for had a story, and I can't remember the name of the motivational speaker. It was the difference between a successful coach and a coach who may need a little bit more work. Because what the coach did was tell the kicker, the coach who needs work, you're kicking it wrong. Don't do this. Quit it. You keep messing up. And just very negative, very counterproductive in telling the guy everything he was doing wrong. So you think the guy didn't know he was doing something wrong? He needed a different approach to help him create a better outcome. The successful coach says, change your toe position. It's the difference between a critic and a coach. The successful coach actually sees how the action can be improved with a different maneuver. And that's what he says, and gives the image as he's speaking of changing the toe position. So instead of repeating the same negative and wrong maneuver, he gave him the image and the instruction to create a better result. That's what we learn as we work with our pets. We learn how to get our message across more efficiently and better in terms of bringing our imagery in our mind to the outcome that we would like to see. So it doesn't matter if you're working with a horse, a dog, a cat, a squirrel. The image that you have in your mind is transparent. So as you are visualizing the image, whatever activity you would like to see, and you've probably seen the videos with the guy working with the hummingbirds or with the guys working with squirrels or women, men, whoever they are on YouTube, and they're surrounded by the animals. There's an image that they are projecting of no harm. It's an energy accompanied by body language and presence. There is no agenda, no harm, no desire to hurt, just a desire to be peaceful and allowing. No agenda, just a mindset of peace, love, empathy. And with that, there are no walls, no barriers, and no expectations. And the animals are free to interact. And so they come up and eat, drink, connect, and the outcome is joy. It's like, wow, what a connection. Beautiful, fluid. And that's what we learn when we work with animals and pets. And I also have a little piece of the equation that happened in terms of the phone ringing from the veterinarian. As I was talking about Gracie earlier, and so I had to stop. Well, it rang again. And yes, I stopped again. So I'll tell you what that was about. Because I wanted to know if there was going to be a connection with Gracie and how she's going to connect with me. And she's so subtle, and she's so fluid, and she's so beautiful. So the connection has to do with that phone ringing and interrupting at the very time I'm talking about her for this conversation. I said I was waiting for the rest of the story, and this is part of it, the rest of the story. I'll tell you coming up. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Earlier in the show, I was talking about Gracie. At the time I was talking about Gracie during that segment, the phone rang. I wasn't going to take the call, but the phone kept ringing. The answering machine wasn't picking up, and I went to go pick it up, and it was already disconnected. So I left a message and said, let me know what I need. The vet's office was calling, and I'm thinking, okay, was this about Gracie or Jack? So I left the message. Well, they call back again. This time I managed to take the call because I'm thinking it's not going to pick up. I take the call, and no, it's not about Gracie. It's about Jack. But the deal is, she says, well, I tried to leave a message, but it kept hanging up on me. So at the time I'm talking about Gracie, the phone is hanging up on the vet's office. All right. That's an anomaly. It's also a contact. That's a clue to me. When I said I was waiting for the rest of the story, that's part of it. That's the connection, because that was unanticipated, unexplained, and completely, totally in sync with what can happen with communications from the deceased. The fact that it is the veterinarian's office trying to connect with me, and I had just said Gracie's name and started to talk about her, the malfunction of the answering machine happens at that time is synchronistic. There it is. Those are the kind of clues I use and I work with because they have, in so many instances, given me an indication of another presence. And that's how it works. It isn't logical. It works. And by repetition and continuing to see results of that kind, then I have a game plan that I work with. I was waiting for the rest of the story. And the rest of the story is we are still connected. The game we played, looking in the mirror at each other, was more than a game. She was telling me something. When she's looking at me in the glass and seeing me, and I'm seeing her, and we're still connected, even though I can't touch her, I can't feel her. It's all now a matter of thought and presence. So I wanted to connect that to something else. There's a movie that's coming out, and it makes a very good case for consciousness and being connected in unconventional ways. Thought. This is a David Bohm film. The present-day identity is based, in his words, I think, on a wrong mode of thought. You see, in which a person identifies with his thoughts and with his body and with things, in which it means that he's creating an illusion. David Bohm. The film, The Life and Ideas of David Bohm, presented for a limited time, free, by the Fetzer Memorial Institute and Imagine Films. If you're interested, infinitepotential.com is the website. It's a wonderful, and this is recreation of the conversation that took place between David Bohm and Jiddu Krishnamurti over a quarter of a century. They both had a lot of insight into consciousness and the future, how this works for us. David Bohm was the man Einstein called his spiritual son, and the Dalai Lama called him his science guru. He's a physicist, an explorer of consciousness. With Krishnamurti, he connected with the Eastern wisdom, and he wanted to find out more about Krishnamurti's thoughts and his belief system. Krishnamurti was an Indian philosopher. The reason he connected so well with Bohm is because Bohm knew how to ask questions, and just how to phrase it so that Krishnamurti could answer it on a deeper level. So this is a conversation between the two of them. But what I like about it is it gets into this thing that I connect with the consciousness and how we are connected on that level even more deeply than we are on this physical level. And my experience is working with animals allows us to think outside the box and to expand our awareness to understand that we are more than this physical vessel. When you connect with an animal, you are using your own telepathic ability. You are practicing and expanding your ability to visualize, to make a mind picture that gives your receptor target, the person or being you're dealing with, an image that they can connect to. And when I've had telepathic experiences, that's exactly what happens. This image is here, it's present, and it's a communication. So in many ways, it's a shorthand. You don't have to have all the words that can sometimes confuse the issue. It is to the point, quick, for animals, an easier way to telegraph an outcome that you would like them to perform for you, if possible. The haunted house in the pandemic, I've also had questions about that, and living in a space that has extra energy is also a challenge because sometimes it can make you tired. It's overwhelming. You want to go to sleep, they keep you up. They wake you up. What do? Well, they knock on the door. They open doors. They shut doors. They make noise in various forms. Sometimes they touch you. In a haunted space, it just depends on what kind of activity is going on. And I'm talking about this because I was part of or being included in a documentary that deals with the haunting at KU, and this is for the Sigma Nu Fraternity House. A lot of rumors, a lot of information about what happened there and why it's haunted and who might be haunting it. And I was actually part of a paranormal group that investigated this haunting. I had been invited to go along as the psychic to interpret or intuit what might be happening. One of the things I did experience was my necklace fell off. We went into a room during the initial event, and the necklace I had on, it's one of those little lock, I don't have the name for it right now, but it's stuck on, and that's the way it works. Well, it came undone. The thing about that is even more unusual is when we went to make the presentation, I was included in the presentation of, you know, what our findings might be about what was going on in that space, and the necklace came off again, all by itself. First, it's a way of saying, are you paying attention? You know, these things usually aren't about frightening you. If you want to be frightened, you can be. But it's more about, are you paying attention? What is it that you're really interested in? You can scare yourself silly, but you can also go and learn that there's more going on here than what we connect to in the physical plane, on the physical plane. And once you understand that, you have the ability to transcend your own limitations, your illusions, and the mental blocks. That's what it's about. And connecting with pets is one of the first steps to expanding the awareness that we can connect without words to other beings in our space. And it's definitely worth it because pets give you feedback. Karen Anderson's book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, has a story where she talks about seeing an image, a picture of a pet. And she looked at the photo and heard the dog say, nervous, nervous, nervous. So she asked the dog's person what that might relate to. She said the dog suffered from extreme anxiety. And so that nervous, nervous, nervous described her perfectly. That's an example of how it works. You get images, you get impressions, bits and pieces of language, sometimes sentences, but that's how it works, and it can be helpful. Paranormal researcher and writer Nicole Strickland wrote recently about the death of one of her pets, The Spiritual Bond Between Humans and Animals, Endless Love. It's on her website, authornicolestrickland.com. And she talks about going through the process, and this is a euthanasia, and then having the encounters after the pet died. Just an indication that the pet was still there. And those are the kinds of things we experience sometimes in the loss of a pet. There will be reminders, whether they, you know, make a sound or you feel them brush against your leg. My dog Max barked. My cat Chloe brushed up against the leg. There were very solid indications that the pet was still in our presence and repeating familiar actions. And everybody experiences it differently, but Nicole's story walks you through that process. Again, that's authornicolestrickland.com. And then the book, The Amazing Afterlife of Animals, is Messages and Signs from Our Pets on the Other Side by Karen Anderson, a bestseller on Amazon. Interestingly enough, Nicole's story, the name of her pet, cat, was Max. The shows in the archives, and most recently, we had an interview with an astrologer who says that things for 2020 have not yet settled, and it will be an interesting year. The thing I see in terms of my own intuition and impression and the guidance that I get, keep your own thoughts clear, present, centered, and moving forward. Don't get caught up in the drama, in the gossip, in the fear. You have the ability to transcend all of that to keep going forward. Expect the unexpected. And when I ask about why we have so little in the way of specific answers, the response has been that changes it. And we're here to do our own homework. And when you are given an outcome, you don't do your homework. You assume, okay, this is what's going to happen. And so you allow that. Instead of saying, anything is possible. How can I create my future? How can I shift my reality for a better outcome? So that's a reason where some of our projections and predictions aren't necessarily set in stone. This is a quote. Does precognition perceive the actual future, the one that must occur, or does it perceive a probable future? A future that might occur. Carefully designed tests suggest the latter. That's from Dean Radin. He's the PhD chief scientist at the Institute of Noetic Science. He's well known for his research on mind-matter interaction. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. Stay well. Past shows are available in the archives at wendyscoffeehouse.com.